Welcome to New Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and each week on this program, I bring what I call a conscious revolution to the listeners, people who have explored different aspects of our common humanity and are building a culture of more awareness. And tonight is a continuation in the series of sacred sexuality, tantra, conscious sexuality, the whole idea of our understanding of what it is to be sexual in a new way. And tonight's guest is John Maxwell Taylor. He's the author of Eros Ascending, The Life-Transforming Power of Sacred Sexuality. John, thank you for being here.
My pleasure, Alan. Been looking forward to this, so good. Good to go, they say.
I know, we've been looking forward to this conversation for a while, and I've loved just talking with you about your experiences and what you've understood in the realms of all the different aspects of sexuality. I mean, it's such a complex topic that I think I would like to focus on personally this idea of, there's sexuality, there's this physical response that people have as animals, and then there's the human arena of love, and then there's a higher aspect as well, which takes us to the divine, let's say. How do you see the life transforming power of sacred sexuality?
Right. Well, that's a really good place to start, and you covered the three major areas. We're physical beings, we're emotional beings, we're spiritual beings. You might say that I like to see the body-mind-organism, as I call it, as a sort of a... There's three computers here. There's one in the head, one in the chest for feeling, one in the head for thinking, one in the chest for feeling, and the one in the gut and the lower part of our body, which gives us our kinetic sense of ourselves. And I think that everything in life works best for me when those three elements, the mental, the emotional, and the physical, are unified, and I'm acting with the equal amount of energy in all those three areas. Well, when you combine that sensation with sexuality, and you focus while you're making love on the certain centers of consciousness that trigger in the brain, what can happen is that you can produce altered states of consciousness that have been talked about by yogis and mystics or been experienced by them, and they've sometimes had to drag out what their experience was out of them. But what we find generally is a sense of bliss, a sense of love that doesn't have an opposite, but also a sense of expansion in space. So that instead of feeling that you are just this being localized in this physical form, you feel that the boundaries of the physical form have melted away, and there is a sense of that you're occupying a much vaster area than just the physical location of your body. When I was writing my book, for example, you know, it's really 4 hours of focusing very intently, for say, in the morning before lunch on getting these ideas through onto paper. When I would stop, the room would be literally vibrating with energy, and I would go out and stand in our driveway, which is surrounded by trees, and I would feel expanded in such a way that I actually felt I could feel myself moving in the sap of the trees and kind of shooting up into their branches and feel almost as if I was connected with the sky. Because when you're being creative, you know, when you're writing, when you're doing anything like that, you are drawing on the source of creative force in the lower part of your body. You're giving birth. You're fertilizing your own heart and brain and giving birth to ideas, and then you translate these into an art form and so forth. So it's a sort of spiritual self-fertilization, really.
Right, that part, but I want to get back to the part of the altered states of consciousness, because is this something during lovemaking you enter in with your partner as well, or is it a solo experience?
Well, it's, yes, of course. The result for each individual, each of the partners, is different because we're all unique expressions of the original creative force. So in the lovemaking, what we have found, my wife and I, is that my approach is that the man has to be fully in service to the woman. When the woman's body-mind organism is full of chi, when you've moved the arousal energy from just the genital area and moved it up into the kidneys, the liver, the heart, the spleen, and up to points in the brain, then the woman opens up to what she really is, which is a conduit for this higher love I referred to earlier, a love that doesn't have an opposite. And
right.
This is what women are really looking for.
Well, how do you move that for the woman?
Well, I personally move it mentally because I can put my mind in the with my wife. I can put this is it's one thing to enter a woman physically.
Right.
It's something else to enter energetically and psychically, but don't misunderstand that word. You know, it's such a
no. I understand the word psychically. It means a merging of energy fields with mind fields and all that. I mean,
exactly. It's a good word.
Yes.
What I have noticed is that when I focus, for example, on her liver or her kidneys. Or move up her spine into her, so I feel as if I'm massaging her heart and her lungs inwardly with energy. Her ecstatic response towards me changes. And when
so you project your consciousness into her heart or her lungs or her kidneys.
Yes, sir. That's right. I do. And
is that because? I'm just wondering because you have a special connection with that woman, or would you find you could do that with anyone?
Well, when we do our seminars, for example, I will sometimes ask a woman to sit 3 or 4 feet away from me, and then we will do open eye gazing, and then I will start to project my energy into her legs, into her arms, and she'll very often start to have what Wright called the orgone response, you know, where the upper half of the body jerks forward, her head will go back, her eyes will turn up, and she'll start getting into a blissed out state. And then I'll say to her, now you send that to me. So it's a sort of non-localized sexual energy transmission.
But how do you do that? What, can you describe that? Because I think that's a valuable skill.
One thing is that if she's right-handed, I look into her left eye.
Okay.
My left eye. You know, but both eyes converge like railroad tracks, no matter what you're looking at. So both my eyes are converging on her left eye, but then sending more conscious intention through my left eye into her left eye, because that's what I call the essence eye. When babies are born, they're in essence. If you look at a baby's eyes, they're both the same. But as we grow up, one eye starts to look different. It's wired to the brain that has our memories of good, bad, and ugly experiences in life. But the essence eye remains the same. For right-handed people, it's the left eye. For left-handed people, it's the right eye. Well, when you look...
Send your essence into that left eye. And what are you doing consciously to activate?
Well, you feel a current of energy, first of all. So there's a shift when I do that. And then I'll perhaps raise my hands... And I'm directing chi over the head of the woman. And then as I lower my hands down towards the ground, it's as if I'm bringing a wave of energy from the top of her head down through her body, right down to her feet. So when you've connected with the essence and you're grounding them into the earth through the feet, then they seem to be, there's a sense within them that they're energetically occupying their entire body. Well, that's the precursor of whole body orgasm. First of all, if you're going to have a whole body orgasm, you've got to be able to sense and feel every part of yourself simultaneously. And then, as I'm doing this, a blissful energy will arise in me, not necessarily a sexual energy, I would say more it's the energy behind sex. But physical energy gives rise to an energy, and that energy can be there whether you're aroused or not. Well, it's the bliss energy that yogis get into, you know, the ecstatic state. So I start to feel that myself, and then I just push it in a wave across the intervening space between me and the subject, and if she's sensitive and receptive, she'll get into the same state. And then if she sends that back to me, it doubles my blissful experience. So basically, you're exchanging the creative, the orgasmic energy of the universe without being sexual. So
would that be a good way to start? Would you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
a practice of sacred sexuality?
Yeah, here's my feeling, yeah. Alan. You know, there are two ways you can get into a state of high arousal. One is by physical contact, obviously, you know, kissing, fondling, some things that we've been doing since we were teenagers. And,
right.
And then there's an energy that arises out of that. If you can connect with that energy before there's any physical arousal, you're home already. And then the physical sensations follow naturally, because it produces a very relaxed and trusting state, for one thing.
I had that with someone over the phone recently, you know?
Yeah.
There was that sensation that we both felt, and it was really beautiful, that connection.
Very powerful. It's non-localized, non-localized transmission of energy from one source to another, which immediately, of course, cancels out time and space, and we're getting into the unified field theory.
And shows you how infinite we are, and perhaps true sacred sexuality doesn't have to happen with just it's beyond the body, of course.
Right, right, exactly. And we're hearing reports from a lot of women, for example, who are having, a woman who was widowed not too long ago, and she woke up in the middle of the night and found herself going into this ecstatic state. She said, "My God, what's happening to me?" You know, it's almost sexual. You know, and she was kind of holding back, and so she called us. And I said, "No, look, you know, I don't know whether it's your husband in some other dimension trying to reach you, or whether it's your higher self wanting you to know that everything's all right. But just relax into it. Say yes, relax, and see what happens." You know, and she's shifted to a whole new level of awareness of herself, and very, very healing, you know, in terms of the grief that she'd experienced, coming back to wholeness and joy and feeling life flowing through her. So I think it can even, you know, be beyond dimensions or beyond different aspects of ourselves. It's just non-localized awareness that the nature of creation is the true nature of it is the ongoing orgasmic sensation of the original creative force.
Well, let's talk about orgasm, because, you know, people like Stuart Wilde, who I hope to interview in the next few weeks, talks about orgasm dispelling negativity and all that, right?
Really? Well, I don't. That's certainly not my experience. But orgasm is like the word God. It means different things to different people, obviously. And for some people, it will be a quick, genitally localized sensation, a quick peak, and that's it. For other people, you know, people who are practicing some forms of tantra, for example, they may be looking to have an expanded or extended orgasm where they move the orgasmic energy from the genitals and spread it through their entire body, you know, so they have this sort of warm sensation throughout their being, and that they're looking to produce extended states of pleasure and be in an orgasmic state for perhaps for an hour, half an hour, and so forth. And this is, you know, wonderfully healing. I feel that ecstasy heals. No question about that. You know, if you can get yourself, I think we're all naturally ecstatic beings. A baby.
It's our natural state, yes.
Yeah, natural state. I did a lecture in Oregon, and a couple brought their fairly newborn child, and it was, you know, lying in its crib at the back of the room throughout the entire talk, 2 hours. It never made a cry out once. So I went to look at it afterwards, and it's lying there on its back with its fingers in the yogi mudra, its face all crunched up in a blissful expression, you know, and it's absolutely, totally absorbed in the blissful nature of its own being. And that's the way we come into the world. I saw a clip of a photograph of Mantak Chia, who I know that you know, showing the baby's mouth open and the tongue up at that little blip spot on the gum behind the front teeth that connects the back acupuncture meridian and the front acupuncture meridian. So the baby is circulating the chi, the life force, within itself in a blissful way. And then, of course, gets seduced out of it by the having to need to come to terms with the world of three dimensions. But I think it's a time now we're starting, many people are starting to realize, hey, the nature of my life, is the source of life within me is blissful. And if I can connect with that, I'm going to be in a sort of ecstatic state. And it produces a tremendous sense of vitality, a sense of joy, and youthfulness, too. So I think it's exciting times we live in.
Well, I think it's great there's teachers like you out there that are understanding the proper use of this energy and
maturing. Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, I don't really see myself as a teacher of tantra or sacred sexuality. You know, I've written the book and so forth, and we do workshops and classes, but it's like not my full-time gig. I do this stuff because I want to feel the things we've just been talking about. It's part of my long, ongoing path to establish myself permanently in higher consciousness that began in 1967. And I was celibate for many years, and when I found that I could use my sexuality to boost my yogic practices and so forth, well, that was, you know, icing on the cake.
Well, what is your ultimate goal then for your, you know, incarnational experience here?
For my incarnation, well, I can't say that there's one particular one, but if there is one, it has different facets. One is to be transparent, to get any sort of idea of myself as, you know, hello, I'm John Maxwell Taylor. I never say I'm John Maxwell Taylor, I say my name is John Maxwell Taylor.
Right.
The sense that I have is I am that I am, and my personal expression is John Maxwell Taylor, or in other words, I am that I am that is expressing as John Maxwell Taylor. So I'm not particularly identified with him. But at the same time, as someone who makes their living in the public eye and have done for many years, I enjoy playing that role in public, you know, and knowing, you know, because I'm an actor and among other things.
You have an expertise in sexuality, which I appreciate, and I think you're a good observer of what goes on, and you've looked at yourself as the observer, as a spiritual being in the role of bring back the joyful experience. I think Eros Ascending, your book, is sort of about that. And I'm interested in that research that you've done.
You
in the book you talk a little bit about, did you ever end up with a partner that you knew wasn't right for you? And and the value of that, can you talk about that?
Sure,
or is that something we should just completely avoid?
No. Every person that you're attracted to, every woman a man is attracted to represents some aspect of his anima.
Mm-hmm.
And every man a woman is attracted to represents some aspect of her male side. You know,
right.
Coming to terms and seeing that within oneself enables one to sort out, well, you know, this is a partial reflection of something I need to see in myself, but it doesn't give a whole enough picture for me to be in a relationship with this person.
Well, how do we own those experiences? Let's say there isn't someone right for us and it brings something up. I mean, how do we then use that as useful information to overcome?
Okay. Shall I give you a case history?
I was the
woman I was with when I learned about sacred sexuality. We went together to study with Mantak Chia, and we might say that she had a somewhat volatile side to her nature. So there would be days when things were very loving and open and so forth, and then she could suddenly flip over and there was more aggressive behavior coming from her.
Right.
And what I learned to do in that case was to, I actually developed a practice that I call sociological Aikido. It was a way of staying in presence and being non-reactive when the obtuse aspects of her nature came out. And, what would happen was this core strength would arise inside me so that I didn't need to respond verbally in a way that was argumentative to her, that I could hold the space and listen to what she was saying even if I didn't agree with it, and mainly not take the bait and get caught up in that sort of whirlwind of you go round and round on the carousel. When people want to argue with you, they don't really want an answer. They just want to set you off.
So that was a practice that you developed, but then how long do you stay with that?
I mean, well, I was in that relationship for 7 years because the love aspect was fantastic. It was very, very, very good. And
the love sexuality.
Yeah, we were practicing the Taoist sexuality techniques, and we felt like we were in school and we were learning about love. I even wrote a song called Lessons in Love at that time. It healed many things that I needed to look at within myself. She got a tremendous amount out of it. But at the end of 7 years, the energy was withdrawn. It was time to move on, and I have no regrets about it whatsoever. In fact, I'm very, very fond of her, still within myself, but it wasn't a lifetime pattern.
And you knew that at the moment that you were with her, that this was not going to last.
Yes, I knew it without thinking about it. It was never going to get to a point where I was going to get down on one knee and say, will you marry me? You know,
right.
It was a fantastic learning experience for both of us, and I'm very, very grateful to her. But it just wasn't a lifetime pattern. Well, you know, there may be many there can be traveling companions, those that you go with to learn lessons about yourself and about how to love. Then there can be soulmates, people who you feel a deep, deep resonance with on a soul level. And then, I don't like to use the word twin soul, but someone who is an almost full reflection. With Emily, my wife, when I met her, she said, it's the first time in her life that she ever felt fully seen by anyone. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason she could say that was because I'd moved beyond that thing where the man projects his anima onto women.
Because you worked through it in other areas.
Yes,
as well.
Exactly. And in the dedication to my book, I say to thank various people, and I say to Emily's bridesmaids, the wonderful women who helped me to understand the meaning of love.
I guess we all have bridesmaids that we encounter until we get to the bride. You know?
Right. Well, women already they are. The source, the true source of woman is that they are embodiments of a love that can connect. They want relationship. They want everything to flow and everything to be wonderful in life and people to be nice to each other and so forth. Because the core of woman is love. All the great romantic melodies have been written by men. Because we're longing for what women have. They're in the International Nurturing Club. You know, we're part of the male principle, like the goats that go up on the mountains and bang their heads together, you know, get stuck up there and die, right? So I don't think women understand how difficult it is for men to really feel deeply. But when men fall in love, you know, even a clod who couldn't normally write a poem to save his life suddenly turns into Lord Byron, you know, starts cracking out all this poetic stuff because when we fall in love, men are moved to a depth of feeling that they can't normally access. That's why and it can make you unstable. That's why there's a tribe in Africa, I can't remember which or where, but apparently when a man fell in love, he used to hang a bell around his neck to let people know he was dangerous.
It's true. I had that experience not too long ago. It's just obsessive. It's just, it burnt up. It flared up and then burnt out. It was just like...
Yes.
I've been there,
Alan, you know.
There has to be a steady road to it, in a way. You know?
Well, the steadiness is what I have with Emily. You know, it's got all of the passion and all of the... I mean, I can stand in the kitchen and watch her cutting carrots, you know, or cauliflowers and making a soup and be totally just entranced watching the aliveness moving through her. She does these simple things, you know. My attention is held easily by her.
I get that.
And so it's a sort of a plateau phase for me, you know. The things where it's very fiery and passionate, you know, in the beginning, if you don't know how to handle it, it can burn both of you out very, very quickly.
How do you handle that, then? What's the sacred sexuality way to handle that?
Well, I think it helps, yes, because you're balanced. You know, Mantak Chia said something about how you have to have... If you have too much fire, you'll dry up the yin element, the water. And if you have too much water, you'll put out the fire. So we need to have this balance of yin and yang within ourselves. And then... It between us, we need to keep it in balance. It was good to remember too that a man's yang pole is between his legs, and his yin pole is on the top of his head. And a woman's yin pole is obviously between her legs, but the yang pole is on the top of her head. Well, what happens when you put two magnets, the opposite poles, to each other? Whoosh! All this energy goes, circulates. So, being aware of these sort of principles, for example, if I felt that I was getting too much in my head, think, you know, I could feel my thoughts getting restless and getting kind of hot up there. I would deliberately kind of mentally push the energy down into my belly and store it in my belly so that I'm not overcooking my brain. You know, when you fall in love and you're obsessing, you can't think about that woman all the time, you know. And after a couple of nights of that, you've got Kundalini syndrome. You're off your feet.
Right. I mean, what I'm observing about you is that you really have understood the energetics of your body.
Yeah.
You know, that, and I think you're able to communicate that. And, but I want to ask you a question about, you know, someone like Bernie Pryor. Do you know him? He says,
yes, I heard his name, yeah.
Yeah, well, he talks about woman. So one woman is really the embodiment of all women, which is the divine feminine. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes. I mean, ideally, a man could look at any woman and sense and feel that that which she represents. Every individual woman represents the eternal feminine. And my Emily's mother, for example, she's 80 years old, and I think she's a babe. You know, there's something there that is really absolutely marvelous. Well, so it's beyond age, and it's beyond physical appearance. You know, a woman can be quite plain. In fact, one of the ancient Taoist teachers, Sima, was known as the plain woman.
Oh,
you know,
right.
But they represent an eternal feminine principle. And somebody asked me once, we were asked once at a seminar that I attended to write down our vision of ourselves, and of course it would change every day, but that day I wrote, I am the eternal champion of the feminine principle.
Honor that more? But how can we champion that?
Well, by looking in women's essence eyes, first of all, and if we look in their personality eye, you may see at any moment their sweet side, their coquettish side, their male side coming out, their challenging side, their hurt side, and so forth. It's like a mixed bag. So you know, it's not you stare, you know, into their essence eye, trying to hypnotize them, but you're just aware, keep coming back to that flow of essential connection with them. What I do is, in our workshops, I will teach people how to look into the eyes, and I will say, okay, now look into this person's essence eye. And now get a feel of what that's like. And now look into her personality eye with a sense you're saying, I am your friend, and I'm going to see the essence of you in your personality structure. Because that's, to me, what real friendship is, that you're extending to see the core reality of that person underneath the whirlwind of personality activity, which is changing every minute. I mean, if you look at people objectively, you see that they're very contradictory. One minute they'll say one thing, then they'll contradict themselves. A desire is replaced by another desire, or a mood by another mood. One minute it wants this, one minute it wants that. Sometimes it will say, I love you, and next minute it doesn't love you at all because you said something that it didn't like, you know. Well, what good is that? That's love that is based on duality. But when you can feel within yourself something which is more substantial than the flip-flop of your reactions to the duality of life and the duality that's sort of inherent in your own body-mind organism, a sense of core, column of calm, as Emily calls it, running right through you, then from that you can do what Shakespeare said when you're talking to people, set death in one eye and honor in the other and look upon both indifferently.
What in one eye did you say? What was the thing?
Death in one eye and honor in the other and look upon both indifferently. It ties in with what Carl Jung said. He said, reality lies at the point of tension between the opposites. And unfortunately, in ordinary romance, you're flipping from one state to another. Now we're ecstatic, now we're not quite sure if we really love each other, you know. Now we want each other, now we're exhausted, and so forth, right?
I mean, this whole idea of this flipping, I think was it you, or I know David Data talks about the stillness that is the male essence that can hold that movement of nature, which is woman. Would you agree with that?
Exactly. That's a great point, Alan, yeah. The metaphor that I often use is that a man's erection should be firm and strong and yang, so that the woman's essential yinness can swirl around it. Well, translate that into life. the woman wants the man to be strong within himself, so that she can explore her emotional nature without fear that if she gets too carried away, he's going to start getting emotionally overreactive and fall under the spell of his anima. And then the woman gets frightened, and she's thinking, oh my God, I thought he was a tower of strength, but now I see this is a ninny. He comes unglued and starts saying all these wild, irrational things, and I can't let go of my male side and relax into my love because I have to be, you know. So
the male themselves. So women have to feel safe enough to let go of their male side so they can come into who they are as the feminine.
Perfect. That's it in a nutshell.
Right.
Well said. Yeah.
Right. So well, I'm just going to go a little further, but in the lovemaking, when you're looking into the woman's eye and they're looking back into your eye, they need to feel that safety in that sense too.
Right. Well, it won't do you any good really to look into their eyes if you haven't established that safety first. This is why, you know, the lovemaking doesn't just begin when you get into bed. It should be there all the time in a respectful attitude towards. I'm so grateful to every woman who's ever kissed me or let me kiss them. Or taking off their clothes and let me see the beauty of their body. I personally don't think there's anything more beautiful on the planet than a woman's body.
I agree with you. It's so soft and just structured as perfect, you know, curves and shapes. It is the, you know, peak of nature itself.
I think. And the sweetness that it can emanate, you know. I remember when I was at a mixed boys and girls school, and sometimes I'd be in a class where it was the boys for a while and the girls were in their other thing. And I remember we must have been around 13 or 14. The teacher I was with that morning said, go over to Miss So-and-so's class and ask her for something, you know. I walked into that room. It was like walking into a garden of flowers.
You still remember that?
I do. I mean, I do. It was, they were fragrant and they all looked at me, you know, and, it was kind of cute because they took a poll and they said I was, you know, their favorite boy in the school at one point. So that was very good for my ego at that point because, you know, you don't really think that much of yourself about the age of 14. But they just smelled like a garden of flowers. It was wonderful.
Right. The other thing I want to talk to you about, and I think you said this, is when you can get into your wife's mind or brain and start to stimulate certain parts, whether it's the amygdala. Can you talk about the brain on sexuality?
About that, didn't we? Right.
Yeah, tell it, because I think that's fascinating.
Sure. Well, that, to me, that is the, you know, she's really good at orgasming. She always has been. But, you know, in extended lovemaking, you want to kind of hold off and let the orgasmic energy spread from the genitals throughout the entire body. So as we're making love over, you know, a period of time, then I will, as I've moved the energy mentally up into her heart and so forth, her lungs, and then the sort of the pièce de resistance is that I will focus on her head.
On which part of her head?
Yeah, the medulla oblongata, which is at the back of the base of the neck there, which is this huge, the human body, the embryo, one cell that forms the medulla, and then the spinal column grows from that. And the brainstem. So the medulla is a very, very key point. And when I start to focus upon that back of the neck, visualizing, I'm in touch with the first cell from which all the other cells were cloned, stem cells and so forth, and then connect that with the pituitary gland. It's like there's a ray of light going from the back of her neck to her pituitary gland, the so-called spiritual eye area.
Mm-hmm.
And then can get into the come down from the top of the head into the pineal gland. So now you've got this kind of triangular situation, and then go down into the center of the brain, into the thalamus and the hypothalamus gland. The hypothalamus gland produces dopamine. And what I visualize there is there's almost, I'm sometimes chant God, 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 or Om, 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 right in the center of her brain, creating the sensation, at least in my imagination, that her hypothalamus gland is producing divine dopamine. Not just ordinary dopamine, but divine dopamine. As soon as I start working like that in the center of her brain, she will orgasm without fail.
And she feels you working in her brain, and she goes through The whole body orgasm, you said.
The whole body orgasm, yeah. And it will last a long time, too. You know, and,
you don't have to even be touching her?
I'm usually touching my wife, but with other women, I've been able to get them to orgasm without even touching them. You know,
by doing the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
By connecting those three points and sending that high
right into
energy.
The center of the brain, the very center of the brain, visualizing God, 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 or Om, 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 or some whatever floats your boat as a spirit, you know, the core of our spiritual being, and it's hard to just. You know, to really make it meaningful just by talking about it like this, because, you know, when you're making love, you are in a different state anyway. And so when you're doing this and you're in this altered state of consciousness, it is so powerful. And of course, as I'm doing that to her, it's happening to me inside by proxy. You see, my own.
So when she has her orgasm, you're feeling it as well, aren't you?
Yes, yes, sir. Her orgasm, I would say when she orgasms, it becomes my orgasm. I feel as if I'm experiencing her orgasm within myself. Mm. And of course, afterwards, I feel like I've been standing under a waterfall. I'm just drenched with this love vibration because Emily represents the divine feminine principle throughout creation.
But to get
to that place, I have to be firm and masterful. You have to be able to manage my ejaculation, you see, and to ejaculate. And be multi-orgasmic myself and not lose my seed and so forth and be able
to... Because if you lose a seed, all that chi gets depleted.
Yes,
there's nothing to hold. Yeah.
Flies off into space and is lost.
So what is so that opens up that area because, I mean, that's, of course, the teachings of the Taoists and some of the tantric people and some of them don't agree with that. And I think you should hold your seed... like the Taoists say, as long as possible.
Yes, as long as possible. Whether you actually ejaculate in the end or not is really up to you, but the longer you can go without ejaculating, the more your own energy will build up within your own body. I personally
Think it's better not to ejaculate?
I've personally ejaculated maybe 24 times since 1985. I'm not counting exactly, but something like that. Because what I get out of not ejaculating is this tremendous sense of that I've spiritualized my consciousness, that my body is vibrating with energy that continues into the next day, and a sense of power and centeredness within myself. It just completely connected in every department and so forth, and it builds and builds, and from this. This gives rise to the expansion that I was talking about, where I can be walking down the street and feel that I'm not just my body, but I actually am occupying a spacious area, you know, several, sometimes hundreds of yards all around me in every direction, and it's all sort of drenched with this joyful, blissful experience. And as I look up at the sky, I feel as if I am the sky, and the energy of the sky is pouring down onto the earth through me, and it can last sometimes for hours.
Well, I think that's also, I think it's exactly what you're saying. It's because you have held onto the energy instead of letting it spill out of you, and that you've had a partner that helped activate that chi that you were able to embrace and move into wholeness energetically with.
That's right, Alan. That, of course, coupled with the fact that I've gotten this download of this divine love energy from her, because power on its own wouldn't be enough. I mean, before I met Emily, I mean, I had tremendous amounts of power from circulating my chi within myself. After meeting her, I remember I was giving a talk one morning in a church in California, and I'm suddenly standing off to one side, looking at myself and thinking, who is this? Just the whole vibration coming off me was this marvelous blend of power and strength and love and sweetness all combined at the same time. And, when we're on our own, when we're single as men, we do these kind of practices, the power comes, it's great. But it's really when we are, this is why we just love you know, the female principle in all forms, because, you know, you can pick up on that, and it comes into your heart and opens up. I have many wonderful friends around the country, you know, women who come to our classes and so forth, and M keeps in correspondence with them, you know, and just knowing that they're there and we're somehow connected energetically as friends, it produces that sort of sweetness within oneself without any kind of sexual connotation whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. So is she a teacher as well, your wife? Emily?
Yes, she teaches the classes with me. We do Soul and Sexuality, the Path of Ecstasy workshops, and we have one in our home here in Cleveland this Saturday. We're already sold out. We keep it down to a small group. It's one wonderful experience. And then we teach people to exchange the bliss and ecstatic energy from several feet away and so forth. And, you know, that helps you as a speaker and a performer, too. You know, I've seen your videos. You're a very magnetic person.
Thank you.
It comes off, even on YouTube, I can see that, you know, there's something there. Here's a man who has put time and effort into charging up the conscious, higher centers of consciousness and so forth, and you're not just, you know, spouting words that everybody else says. There's a sense that there's something there that's magnetic and kinetic, and I recognize that myself, you know, same quality.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, I'm doing these interviews first for me to learn what's out there, and then if I can share what I've learned with other people, then I'm happy about that.
Yes.
Right. It's my obsession, or in a sense, my compulsion to learn as much as I can about who we are as these beings on
right.
the physical. I think most spiritual people don't include the physical. I think the physical, like this, and the sexuality part is so key, because here we are in these bodies that are beautiful manifestations of spirit.
Right, and I said this in my book, and there was a review in Enlightened Next magazine of my book. It was a very favorable review, but the reviewer said at one point, "Is it really true, as Taylor says, that all enlightened states are caused by the union of the sexual energy and the centers of the brain?" And and I'm not sure if he understood what I was saying. You don't necessarily need to be sexually aroused to have that state come upon you, that ecstatic, expanded state that yogis and Catholic mystics would have and so forth. But that is what is principally happening, is the magnetic force in the lower part of your body unites with the heart and unites with the brain. And then that produces samadhi, or suspension of the senses, or the various states of ecstatic bliss that the mystics talk about. But we, 21st century mystics now, we're scattered all over the earth, people like you and me, the people who are listening to this program. We don't have time to go off into caves and to live in monasteries and so forth, and to fast and to do all the extreme things that people did in previous centuries to attain ecstatic mystical states. But by uniting our spiritual pursuits and practices with our sexual energy, it's like putting rocket fuel into your mix, and it brings everything together. Sex energy is the force that brought us into this world, and then if we can learn to give it back to the source of our very being, then we can progress. In one lifetime, you can attain what it may have taken incarnations of self-mortification in the darker ages, or going off on tangents that seem to promise something that eventually led nowhere. We can be done with all that, and it's my belief that one can evolve in one lifetime by bringing all of these aspects together within oneself. In one lifetime, one can attain liberation.
I totally agree, and not only that, we are, if we combine this sexual energy with the vibratory transition that seems to be happening on the earth plane in general, we are moving into this accelerated opening.
Yes.
It seems like something's happening on the planet.
Well, it is. It's an era of tremendous transformation. I personally think everything shifted around 1967, 68. I was at Findhorn in 1973, you know, the pioneering
right.
spiritual community in northern Scotland, and that was one of the general perceptions that they had there, was that there was a vibratory shift around that time, and, you know, on the sort of popular level, it became like the Summer of Love, you know, and you're going to San Francisco and all that sort of stuff. That was a sort of a mundane translation of it. But what was really happening, it was that the divine feminine energy was like a cosmological switch was thrown, and that vibration, which is creative, began to impinge tremendously upon our consciousness, and it's forcing us to come into relationship with each other all over the globe. And the tension that we feel internationally is caused by resistance to that, by people who can't move easily into the vibration of international relationship or interpersonal relationship with people who are closest to them. It's like they're clamped down from the top with these mindsets which are outmoded now. And they're going to be shaken till their teeth rattle. But
changing. I think there are people holding on to the old way, but there's so many people opening up to what's new.
Exactly, and that's what your program is about. It's what my book is about. It's what this conversation is about. And since sexuality is the most powerful force in our bodies, if we can align it, as you say, with this movement, this global movement towards higher consciousness, then we're aligning ourselves with the emerging evolutionary pattern of the planet, and naturally that's going to speed up our personal evolution.
I totally agree. I just want to ask a few questions, though, about basics. I mean,
going back
to the body. I mean,
right.
'Cause I love what you say, and yes, it's important to take it to that higher level so we have the big picture. On the practical level, men holding back their ejaculation or transmuting the energy, Ma Tak Chia has a way of the microcosmic orbit where you pull that pleasure, that sensation up the back and around the front. There's also the cobra breath. But what do you think is the best way that you've learned?
Well, when I first tried to control my ejaculation, I was using Ma Tak Chia's first basic technique, which it may have changed now, but in those days it was you clench your fists and your teeth, and you squeeze the Kegel muscle 9 times as you take sort of 9 in-breaths, quick 9 breaths, like, and so forth, and you kind of bring the energy up your spine to the brain and then back down again. But I think I must have overdone it in the teeth clenching department, because when I went to the dentist a few months later, he said, "What have you been doing? You've cracked 3 fillings." So that's the sort of physical way of doing it. That was necessary in the beginning, you know, because you're trying to stem something that you have a habit of just letting it go. But quickly that gave way to just mentally, as soon as my intention, as soon as I felt the sperm starting to move and heading for the exit gate, by looking at the pituitary gland, which is the trigger of the spiritual eye, so-called, putting my tongue on the tip, and the tip of my tongue on the gum behind the 2 front teeth, and perhaps a few little breaths. I didn't need to squeeze anymore. The energy would just shoot up by itself, and I would see a flash of light in the front of my forehead, and then this blissful sensation in my brain, and then it was as if warm honey been poured over my brain, and it would run quickly down through my mouth, down my chest, and into my stomach. But at the same time, there was no loss of erection, so I'm able to keep moving, making love.
I mean, in those days, did you ever feel like, oh, you wanted to ejaculate, even though you didn't want to, just to kind of give yourself a little pleasure, or a little, if you were feeling self-pity, like that?
Right. Very important to point out here that I didn't feel any loss of pleasure whatsoever, because I trained myself to go 98% into the orgasmic state, just as was almost inevitable that the seeds would come out. I got so I could surf on the brink of that. So you got all these pleasurable orgasmic sensations in the lower half of your body, but when I would pull up and bring the energy up to the brain, all of that ecstatic energy in the lower part of my body would surge up into the upper part of my body and my brain.
And so everyone is capable of doing that as well. I mean,
I'm sorry, I missed that. What?
I'm just saying anyone with enough practice can have those same experiences.
Yes, because I believe it's natural. I think that's really what is supposed to happen. So just to come back to your question, yes, in the first couple of years, occasionally I would ejaculate. So I got to compare the two, and it quickly became apparent to me, you know, what am I trading here? 6 to 10 right. seconds of an ecstatic peeing sensation, and then it's over, or keeping it going so that I'm feeding that ecstatic sensation back up inside myself. Well, of course, what happens is that you start to feel as if every cell of your body, your arms, your legs, your torso, your internal organs, your loins, even your feet and hands, and of course your brain, just absolutely tingling and vibrating with ecstatic, blissful energy. And it's a remembrance for the body on a deep, deep unconscious level. Oh, yes, I know this state because I was born in this state.
Nice. And for women then, I mean, if women, in order to, a lot of women have shut down their sexual energy or
yes.
held it in through trauma, through lots of things. How can women start to then reactivate the fact that they are sexual beings and they have incredible drive and incredible capacity for pleasure? Yeah.
Well, there's an amazing amount of information available for women. Deborah Sundahl, who's the female ejaculation expert who kindly contributed to my book, she's got some marvelous videos there on her site, I think it's IsisMedia.com, that you can find, women can find teachers that will allow them to heal their sexuality. Because if you're single, for example, you know, you've probably heard of the Taoist concept of single cultivation. You can work with your own sexual energy if you don't have a partner by running the energy from your yin pole to your yang pole, whether you're male or female. So that's an important phase too in training oneself to be a Taoist or a tantric ecstatic person. But of course, ultimately, you want to be in a relationship with someone. And what I've found is that when women feel that they're with a man that they can really trust and let go of their male side, their hearts will open up. Then the higher centers of feeling in their body, and then the physical will surrender into that. They will feel, oh, I can trust now, I can let go of my male side, and naturally the body starts to remember its own innate capability of being susceptible to highly charged orgasmic states of sexual pleasure. Of course, it helps if the man knows what he's doing. So the man should study the female anatomy, and you can get wonderful videos that show ways in which a man can touch a woman with his hands and put her into a tremendously extended orgasmic state. I think Dr. Patty Taylor has one.
I've interviewed Patty. She's great.
She's great. She has a really good video, which we sometimes show clips of to friends at our little sessions, where her partner is putting her into an extremely ecstatic state. The information is there. In the back of my book, I list a lot of resources, and of course, I give a lot of techniques and things in the course of the book, which is a sweeping overview of all the things that we've been talking about. People are at different levels in their evolution and in their personal journey, and some people are going to need to learn to reconnect with their sexuality and learn to love themselves just on the physical level, first of all, to kind of heal and flush out things from the past and bad memories and body armor, emotional armor and so forth. But once you've got that taken care of, then you can start to realize, oh my God, you know, I like to say everything we know about sex we learned in the dark. Well, as soon as you start to turn on the light, you see that there's nothing to be afraid of. And if you've had bad experiences in the past, it actually didn't happen to the body that you're sitting in right now, because your cells are being replaced all the time.
Right, it happens in the mind, and we have to let go of the mind. And I think sexuality is a way we can let go of this mind thing that we become obsessed with in the West.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I always say, get out of your head and into your life. And for a long time, my mantra was, off with his head. Off with his head. I love what Gurdjieff said. You must feel your mind is a luxury. So I've trained myself. My center of gravity is really in my solar plexus and my belly. And I'm dropping down all day long. Am I interested in that? that run on commentary. That monkey mind thing that everybody tries to silence when they sit to meditate, what that's really caused by is sexual energy. Every time you breathe in, the creative force in the lower part of your body moves up from the sex center to your brain, and it feeds those synapses, those grooves and conditionings in your brain that keep those thoughts circulating. So basically, if you don't use your sex energy to open up your brain to ecstatic experiences via consciousness, what it's going to do is keep you asleep by running those thoughts over and over again and producing daydreams.
So this is really what you mean by Eros ascending,
yes.
Using that sexual energy to open up the brain so we can become greater beings of light and
yes, sir, that's it exactly. Once the brain cells start to get saturated with their original ecstatic energy, you yourself will lose all interest in listening to that yada da 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 non-stop chitter chatter in your head, which is a tale told by an idiot full of sound and fury signifying nothing. You'll turn that the volume down on that to almost nothing, because what you'll be listening for is the ecstatic, joyful feeling of just being alive while you're walking down the street in the midst
wow.
of life.
Thank you, John Maxwell Taylor. We're just about out of time.
Hey, Alan, it's great talking to you. We have to get together
yes.
at some point. You really feel like you're a brother. And
well, we are. We're on the same wavelength. I really appreciate everything you said here, and it's been great learning for me and integration and something I want to promote. So next time you're in New York, we'll do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay,
your
well,
website is... Well, your website
oh, yes,
is erosascending.com.
Yes, right. It's erosascending.com. My book is Eros Ascending, The Life-Transforming Power of Sacred Sexuality. And there's a little video clip of me talking about it on the website so people can kind of get a feel for me and everything. So
great. Well, next time you're in New York, definitely give me a call.
We sure will. Yeah.
And
I expect
to
be there next spring. So I'll see you then.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for having me on your show. It's great.
I really appreciate it. This is Alan Steinfeld, just having a beautiful conversation with John Maxwell Taylor. If you want to reach me, you can email me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com, for this interview and others as well. Thank you for listening.